Welcome back to Vanguard Radio. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. This week, I'm pleased to present part two of our interview with Joe Armstrong, Vice President and General Manager of CAE Canada. Joe, welcome back to part two of our show. This is going to be a pretty exciting segment as we delve into MADXR and AI technology and AR technology as promised. Joe, we've been hearing about MADXR, a technology that you are jointly developing with DRDC and NRC. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Sure. So, you know, this is a part of CAE that people are often not aware of, and we have all sorts of things kicking under the hood that are actually quite fascinating. So back in the 60s, and you got to look at even the genesis of CAE. When CAE was first formed, you know, we were not just a training company at the time. You know, and in fact, Ken Patrick, some of the initial work that we had done was actually working on supporting some of the radar systems that existed across Canada for defense and other what I would call more traditional aerospace and defense systems engineering and software engineering capacity. So as the company evolved since its foundation back in the 60s, we developed a product called a MAD system, or a magnetic anomaly detector system, which is effectively an aircraft-mounted device or sensor package that detects the magnetic disturbance created in the Earth's magnetic field by the presence of large bodies of metal under the ocean, right? So as you can imagine, this has primary application in the anti-submarine warfare domain, and it's one of the assets that's typically used in anti-submarine warfare or ASW aircraft like the CP-140 Aurora to form part of their ASW sensor suite to supplement to acoustic processing systems like, you know, dipping sonar and sonobuoys and things of this nature. Now, we've been very successful with that product. In fact, we almost have a world monopoly in terms of being the only mature company that actually has a fielded device on the order of over 2,000 units that have been developed and deployed since the inception of the MAD product line up until this point in time. Now, one of the challenges that the traditional MAD system had is it's quite heavy. So the old device was very sensitive to magnetic disturbances within the context of the body of an aircraft, and it also weighed about 60 kilograms. So that had a couple of different impacts in terms of the available platforms that we could deploy that system to. One being is you had a size, physical size and payload carrying capacity limitation in terms of ASW aircraft that could actually mount that device and be effective and effectively operate it. And number two is the need to isolate that sensor from disturbances on the hull of the aircraft or the outer skin of the aircraft drove it to really only be fielded on, you know, aircraft like the P-3 or the P-8 and larger ASW platforms. Over the last 4 years, due to a number of advances in technology, both in terms of software and artificial intelligence algorithms that can partial out interferences of metal and other magnetic disturbances from the sensor itself, to miniaturization technology, we've been able to shrink that device from a 60 kilo payload to about a 5 to 6 kilogram payload. And over the last 2 years, we've gone through a series of field trials, both supported by DRDC and NRC in Canada, but also supported by Lockheed Martin and the U.S. Navy in terms of testing the viability of that device, both in its historic application on larger ASW aircraft, but more importantly, on payloads that are much smaller, things like UAVs, unmanned systems, as well as rotary wing aircraft. And we're very excited from the performance of the system that we've collected to date in that it's meeting or exceeding the capacity of the traditional MAD device in a form factor that's much lighter and certainly a much broader market in terms of deployability of that system. So, you know, look over the next 6 to 12 months as we start to get into fielding the initial devices out into the field and in operational duty. You know, I can say, again, it speaks a little bit to the IEB policy and the support we get from the Canadian government. I don't know if you're familiar with or not, but Canada has a what they call a built-in Canada program, BCIP program, and it's really an opportunity for any company to provide technology to the Defense Department and have it trialed in a fielded application. So just so in the next month or two, we're going to be fielding our first MADXR system, the small miniaturized device, to the Canadian government to actually start to trial out in operation. So we're very excited, and the team deserves a lot of kudos for the great work that they've done over the last couple of years, reaching that level of maturity with the device.
That's a great program, and it allows you to kind of measure twice and cut once. And it's amazing just to see how AI is everywhere. And I think we're just scraping the surface with AI technology as well. Joe, I guess one of the final questions I have is, what are some of the innovations and technology developments in training that we can look forward to hearing about in the future? A little bit of a teaser, I guess, for our listenership and readers, because you guys are high in the innovation and training side of things. What else can we expect from CAE?
Sure. So, you know, lots of innovation. I mean, the AI topic is obviously a fascinating one. You know, it's fascinating for me personally as an individual. You know, back in the earlier part of my career, I did quite a bit of work in the artificial intelligence field, and at the time, looking at the advent of AI and how it can be incorporated into things like decision support tools to training systems to represent, you know, virtual avatars and virtual actors within virtual simulation and things of this nature. And it's quite encouraging to see how far and how rapidly that technology is actually advanced and starting to make its way into everything from consumer electronics to some of the more advanced applications that we see. You know, for us, there's a couple of things that are really interesting and fascinating to watch on the horizon. I'll talk first off at the lower level device, the device side. And it's a bit fascinating to see what's changed in the virtual reality market, right? And so the whole concept of, you know, having accessible VR and accessible augmented reality has been something that's certainly been in the buzzword of, you know, a lot of gamers and a lot of kids that are going through, you know, their Xbox consoles that have access to these little VR helmets that you can now buy for $500 and gain sort of an experience of what it's like to be immersed in virtual reality. And again, going back to, you know, an earlier part of my life, back in the early to mid-2000s, in conjunction with General Dynamics Canada and BRDC Canada, we had done a series of research programs looking at the utility of virtual reality headsets in things like armored vehicle system design and armored vehicle design. And I can tell you, you know, the helmets we used to use back then had price tags in the order of $150,000 to $200,000. And so to see technology migrate from a $200K price point down to a $500 price point that, you know, your son or daughter can go out and buy right now is pretty fascinating. What's been interesting, though, is watching the actual slowness in it really taking off as a technology area, right? And so there's a number of reasons behind that. I think a lot of them are due to the fact that VR headsets still have a lot of perceptual issues in terms of people's ability to actually use them in real applications. People still get motion sick with them. They have difficulty interacting environment when the environment itself is all virtual, so their ability to feel things and have tactile responses to things is still not very well integrated in VR. And in fact, there was a really interesting article that came out on the, you know, one of the big CES computer electronics shows just a couple of months ago, with an observation from the community in general on the gaming side that, you know, there was so much promise with this technology, but it just hasn't taken off, and they haven't been able to surmount some of the issues that they've been experiencing, and so it's still a little bit lagged in terms of its application. Where we see really interesting evolutions now is in what we call augmented reality, which is really the ability to have a fusion of, you know, a headset that's transparent, that can display imagery into your visual field, but then fully merge that information directly in a reality around you, right? And so the ability then for you to actually interact with things directly and then have stimulation by visual imagery projected into your augmented reality headset is really opening the doors for new training applications that were simply never available to people before, and even into the operational community in terms of having access to data that can actually be environment and situation specific that's made available to you as an operator and provide you a wealth of greater information than you ever had before. So certainly you'll start seeing that, and then some of the systems that we'll be fielding in the relatively near future, you're going to start to see augmented reality devices starting to form part of some of our solutions that we bring out to market. One of the other big areas for us, and this was really driven by advances in big data analysis and artificial intelligence, is certainly on the digital intelligence side. So really looking at the way we collect data out of people's individual training experience and then use artificial intelligence, use understanding of human performance, cognition, human perception to actually customize the experience of a training program to an individual. And so when you think about the way training has worked traditionally, it's typically been very prescriptive, right? People need to have X number of hours under a certain training regime to be able to become qualified, and they have to meet a certain level of performance to become qualified to do a task. And the advent of things like digital intelligence and a product line that we call CAE Rise, it gives us the ability to start tailoring the experience of a training system to the actual individual as they migrate their way through training. And so you can imagine it's the most optimal way to actually create a training experience for a student as they migrate through the training system itself. We're seeing great opportunities on the civil side to do this, and certainly as, you know, the training regime on the defense side becomes more complex, you know, we're seeing more integration of things like live virtual constructive technologies. The ability to optimize the selection of a live virtual or constructive system as part of a student's training experience becomes one of the ways that you really drive efficiency and optimization in the experience of training for students as they go through those systems.
That's incredible. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see how technology and innovation develops over the next 12 to 24 months for sure. And I really appreciate you sharing that with us today, Joe. We have had the pleasure of speaking with our special guest, Joe Armstrong, Vice President and General Manager of CAE Canada. Joe, thank you for joining Vanguard Radio today.
Well, thanks very much, and I look forward to maybe joining you at another date in the future.
Yes, I hope you'll come back. It's a wealth of information for sure.